The Junior NBA Coaches Corner is back. Today, we're chatting about March Madness memories. Here to help us dive in is former UConn assistant coach and current Wisconsin head coach Marissa Mosley and former Butler Bulldogs Ronald Norred and Shelvin Mack.
Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner with your host, Monica McKnight.
Guys, today we are diving into what I would argue is the most wonderful time of the year, not named Christmas, March Madness, and we're going down memory lane with three fantastic guests who each made their mark in the month of March, former UConn assistant coach and five-time national champion and current Wisconsin head coach Marissa Mosley. We go back, we'll get into that a little bit, as well as former Butler Bulldogs and national champion finalists Ronald Norred and Shelvin Mack. People, hello.
How you doing?
I'm good. Shelvin and Ronald, I went to Georgetown. And so before we dive into this podcast, I just have to tell Marissa, the double overtime game to go to the Final Four, UConn and NC State. I know you are now the head coach of Wisconsin, but what was going through your mind?
So we were in, postseason workouts because we're not quite at the level of playing in the tournament to go to the Final Four at this point. And so I was here in my office with one of my assistants, and so many thoughts, so many bodily movements. I was kicking, I was punching, I was yelling, I was jumping up and down. Some expletives, because that's how we do it. So it was just, it was exciting, but I'm so proud of them and can't wait to get to Minneapolis and cheer them on.
It's a weird feeling, guys. And I'm sure that y'all could probably relate to whoever the rivals or the gold standard were back in when you guys were playing. I was in studio for ESPN, Marissa, and like, I appreciate UConn, but I also always got my butt kicked by UConn, and I covered NC State and I knew those girls. And so it was this very like, this is great basketball, but also, oh, here goes Goliath again. We respect y'all. We respect y'all. All right. Having said that, let's get into it. Gentlemen, how are you both?
I'm doing good.
Okay. So let's jump. Let's go right here. And I'll start with you, Shelvin. Give me a memory. I mean, obviously, you guys are sort of the iconic squad with Butler, a run. Just give me a memory that stands out most for you from March Madness.
The one thing that stands out most for me is that we went to school on the Monday of the national championship.
Please tell me more.
Out of everything, that's what stood out. So no, the national championship game is at 9 p.m. It's usually later than what it usually is, but we had to go to school that day. I thought it was the craziest thing ever. Duke was just sitting over relaxing the whole time, so I think it had a lot to do with us losing.
Are you serious though?
Yeah, I'm bad, sir.
That hurt, for real. That hurt.
Please piggyback, Ronald.
Because I studied to be a teacher. And so, you know, the tournament games are Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I actually didn't have class on Friday or Thursday and Friday. So throughout the tournament, I wasn't going to class. Like, I didn't have to do study hall or anything throughout the tournament because I didn't have class on Thursday and Friday. I could just, you know, go to class during the week. We traveled on Wednesday to go to wherever we were going, play Thursday, play Saturday. I was good. But then the national championship game comes around. This is my first time going to class on the day of a game in a month. And so we stayed at a hotel downtown Indianapolis, and where Coach Stevens' hotel room was, it was like behind this, I don't know, it was behind this fence is the only thing I can describe it as. And so the night before the game, I walked down to the fence to go tell him, Coach, this ain't it. Like, we can't go to class tomorrow, man. And I chickened out at the last minute. I turned around and went back up to my room. I had to wake up to get on the bus to go to class. My class started at 8 a.m., right? So I had to get up at 7:30, my first time waking up to go to class all tournament. And it wasn't even about school. People were talking about the game, wanted autographs, wanted to take pictures, everything but school. So we would have been better off just staying in the room.
Okay, so I'm glad you mentioned that you advocated for the team, or almost advocated the team. In hindsight, would Brad Stevens also acknowledge that was a misstep?
I don't think he would.
You know, I was going to say the opposite. I think he would. I'm flying. We play the Celtics in a couple of days. So I'm flying to Boston tomorrow. I'll ask him.
Please ask him. And we need answers. You have to call it back for another segment on the podcast. All right. So, Marissa, I mean, you, longtime assistant, what's a memory for you? You guys are obviously super successful.
So many great memories. Probably the one that stuck out the most to me though was my first year. So I get there, UConn's just coming off a national championship. And so I'm like, okay, I'm playing in, you know, coaching in the Final Four for the first time. I have the Stanford scout. So we play Baylor in the semifinal. We play Stanford, the national championship. At halftime, the score is 20-12 and we have 12. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be the reason that we don't win. Like, they brought me here and it's obvious. Now, you know, it's, you always internalize everything, whether you're a player, but as a coach, you only have so much control and we just prep and then whatever. But fortunately, we also had Maya Moore and Tina Charles. And in the second half, Maya came out and did what Maya does. And Tina came out and did what she did. And we ended up winning. And it was the first time experiencing that. And I thought I was so cute because I was 28 at this time. It's a few years ago. And so I may or may not have had on some heels this big. And I proceeded to, after we won, go pick up Coach Ariyama and jump with this man, like four steps. And it's only God, by the grace of God, that I did not bust my ass. So that is probably my favorite memory.
I love that. I love that. Now, both of you guys, or all three of you, excuse me, sort of allude to something that I think is part of the mystique of March. And it's sort of, I don't know how to phrase it, like the ability to adjust and adapt, but also understand your identity. So Ronald, I'll start with you. When you look back at that run and all the tournaments that you've watched, and what do you think is kind of the key component for a team or a player being able to find success through March Madness?
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, with the experience of playing, especially, I think, you know, being prepared to play your best basketball at the end of the season, I think is the most important component. You know, I give our coaching staff a lot of credit. When we played, you know, we didn't go crazy throughout the year with running and practicing like crazy. Our whole thing was to be the freshest team in March. And that was number one. Number two, we were so connected. And I think being connected at the end of the year, I mean, there's nothing more important. You watch that St. Peter's team that just made that run. They just look crazy connected in everything that they were doing. And so, you know, being fresh for March, being able to play your best basketball at that time, being a connected team, a team that can fight for one another, that can get through adversity, because you're going to go through, I mean, you do during the season, obviously, but there's so much pressure on every game when you get to the tournament. And that minute you hit adversity, we used to do it, like, we used to watch other teams argue and stuff when adversity hit. And we knew the game was over at that point, you know, because we were so connected. We knew we could get through whatever we needed to. I just think that's a big deal. And then you need good players. I mean, yeah, let's be real. Like, you need people who can play. So, you know, for our team to have, you know, Gordon, to have Shelvin, to have a guy, Matt Howard, that we had, you know, you know, a guy named Sean Manzant that played really well in 2011. Like, we had some guys make some big time plays, and without that, you know, you can't continue to advance.
Shelvin, talk to me a little bit more about how that connectivity develops, right? Because it's not a given. It's something that you have to build and groom.
Yeah, we had a lot of time. So coming in, it was six freshmen. So we built chemistry right away. Is there being in the summer? But piggyback off a little bit, we get that chemistry going with Ryan's talking about. I think we might have been the only team in America who will have a media timeout in practice. So we'll practice like the game. So we got a rhythm and understand how to play in certain situations. And we always broke games down into 4-minute games, not looking at a half. You have a media timeout every 16, 12, 8, and 4. So we practice like that to help us have a big advantage in playing. But having six freshmen coming in, you know, we got memories. We got through Ron stuff on the football field, on the 50-yard line. I'll let you build chemistry and people enjoy hanging out with each other.
Marissa, as a coach, I mean, you mentioned the Stanford memory. Like, how do you not juggle two things? How do you juggle the identity and the preparation, trusting it, but also knowing when to adjust?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Coach Ariyama obviously is a legend in the game. And unlike Butler, we practice like hard throughout the whole season.
Not that well, because we all know y'all was blowing teams away. Like, you know, practice was tougher than the games.
Yes, exactly. And sometimes, you know, one of our, the way we end practice is like five spots and it's a passing drill. And so, you know, the kids would always be like, as they felt like it could be coming, be like, can I get a five spot? So like they were ready for it to be done. And he would just keep pushing and pushing and pushing. So the preparation piece was, you know, making those practices harder, but also putting us in those situations. We also did that. We would make 4-minute games. We would, you know, challenge them within the game. You would switch the score. You know, you'd be winning. And then all of a sudden, if you were up, now it flips it and now you're down. Like just different ways to try to make sure the preparation. And so you could adapt. I also think we were really fortunate at that time. You know, we were in the Big East at the beginning of my time there. And there were so many different styles that we played it, you know, played against on any given night. You know, then we ended up going to American and same tip type of thing. But at that Big East at that time, I think at one point we had 8 teams in the NCAA tournament. So it's that prep is also there. But, you know, like Ronald said, like you have to have good players, right? It doesn't matter how masterful you are. It doesn't matter your game plan. At the end of the day, you have to have great players.
Ronald, you brought up the St. Peter's run and you talked about connectivity. How much, I mean, Marissa, it's different for you because you guys were always had the most talent, arguably maybe the best coach year in and year out. But I'm just wondering about what makes a Cinderella in you guys' observation. I mean, Ronald and Shelvin, when y'all made that run, you were not anticipated to do that. Like, is it purely the connectivity or is it some lapses and a little bit of luck too?
So I want to dispel a myth real quick. From our first, so we went to two Final Fours. Our second year, for sure, I think we were like the fourth team in our league. We had to win every game in the conference tournament to get to the tournament. We ended up doing it. We made the run of the national championship. I think we were, what were we, Shell? A 9 seed or something like that?
An 8 seed.
Yeah, we really, you know, I want to say we had no business being there. We made a way. Our first year, the year that everybody really remembers, when we played Duke. If you go back and look at the preseason rankings, we were number 10 in the country to start the year. Everybody forgets that. Like we were nice. And everybody thinks, you know, we were this Cinderella team. Our second year for sure. Like we had to go through some adversity and win a lot of games to get there. Our first year we were set up, I think, well to make the run that we made. But perception was we were that Cinderella team. We never felt like that inside the building. Yeah. I mean, we won 18 games in a row in our conference. We won the conference tournament. I mean, we didn't lose anything. We won 25 games straight before we lost in the national championship game. But with that being said, I think, you know, yeah, we were Butler and we played, you know, we're playing Syracuse, who was number one in the country at one point. We're playing Kansas State, you know, who had two great players and were big and physical. And teams looked at us and they looked at the other teams and were like, you know, these guys, Butler can't match up with, you know, the Power Five school programs, you know, at that time. And again, we didn't feel that way, but I think, you know, watching the St. Peter's or watching these teams that, you know, that go deep and make these runs, you know, they have St. Peter specifically, like they were actually pretty good in their league. I think they ended up being second in their league. So these teams are used to winning, you know, and so they have that winning formula. When you're used to winning, you just find ways to win. You know, and, you know, there's not a lot of Cinderella teams that were not very good in their conference or not very good throughout the season. They end up going to the tournament and then they, you know, make their own tournament. These teams win and they're used to winning and they have good coaches that teach them how to win. And so I think that's number one. And then I just go back to that, the connectivity of the team and then the matchups. Matchups are so big in the tournament. You know, it's still crazy to me that every year, a 12 seed beats a 5 seed. Like that is going to happen. Somebody has to do a study on why that is, because I don't know. But those matchups are always close enough, you know, that 12 seed can get it done for whatever reason that is. So you're a you know, a lower level team that's playing a team that, you know, we always felt like when we played teams that couldn't shoot, we were going to win, you know, because we spent all year having to guard teams that could shoot and we were having a game plan and figure out how we can cover the 3-point line. We play certain teams from the bigger conferences. They have two guys on the court that can't shoot. So we just stood in the paint. It made the game easier for us. So it's all about those matchups and the game planning when you get to that point.
That's a great point. All right, I want to do one more word, and then I got some specific questions on where you guys are now. And it's pressure. Because whether it is internal pressure because we were ranked preseason number 10 and the whole country forgot that, or it's your second run as Butler, or Marissa, the pressure of the name on front of the jersey at when you were at UConn, how do you handle pressure? And Shelvin, I want to go with you. How do you encourage these athletes, and how did you guys handle pressure?
I don't think we felt like we had any pressure. I'm a big believer. You feel pressure when you're not prepared. If I'm prepared for a test or the game, there's no pressure at all. Now, usually you get nervous and wondering when you didn't study, you didn't do your homework, you didn't watch film, didn't read the scout report. So I think everyone on our team was held themselves accountable to do all those things. And we knew everybody was going to be prepared. So whether we won or not, it wasn't any pressure as long as we did our job.
Mm. Marissa, pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I think we put more pressure on ourselves than anybody else could, right? And Coach was really good about kind of letting each team know individually, you haven't accomplished anything yet, because the expectation and the standard was you're going to win a national championship. I think it's like some crazy stat, like every kid since 1985 or something like that has gone to at least one Final Four that's played at Connecticut.
That's wild. And
it's crazy. It's crazy.
It's just very like wild, Ronald, especially when you had to compete against them and you just knew. It's fine.
Yeah. It just boggles the mind.
Didn't have that pressure at all.
Yeah, yeah. But it was like that. It was almost like we leaned into it. And it's funny because, you know, you could have a year where you went to the Final Four, which would happen. You know, I was fortunate enough to be a part of 5 championships, but that means of the 9 years I was there, we went to the Final Four every year, but 4 of those years we didn't win. And so people would come up to you and be like, oh, nice year. You're like, nice year? Anybody else that went and lost in the semifinals of the Final Four would be like, that was phenomenal, whatever. But that was the pressure. That was the expectation. And so I think that now it's funny because when I step into, you know, a Power 5 job, people are like, are you nervous or whatever? It's like, no, I've had like the most, I feel like, expectation. Now, if I'm fortunate enough, which the plan is to get my team to play in a Final Four, hell yeah, let's I'll go. Be nervous. But but I'm excited for it because I have seen, you know, what it takes to get there.
I love that. I love that. And Marissa, I have no doubt. It's only a matter of time, baby. I love it.
Oh, thank you.
All right, guys. So let's talk about what you're up to now. Obviously, Marissa, you're a head coach at Wisconsin. Ryan, you're with the Pacers. Shelvin, you're doing your thing in the world of basketball. What I think, I guess, from the big time March experiences, which truly only just encapsulate a lot of the time that you spent in college and as an assistant, what is the biggest piece, I guess, that translates to where you are now and what you're up to, Ron?
Yeah, that's easy for me. So, you know, even with the pressure thing for our teams, when we were playing, you know, Brad Stevens is our head coach, and there was such a strong trust and level of calmness that he built in our team and the connectivity really of the staff as well, that when we got down, we still felt like we were good because we knew we had a guy that was going to get us in the right spots, you know, and have the plan to keep us moving forward. And so I think that translates to, you know, what I'm doing now, obviously as a coach and, you know, as an assistant coach, trying to build that connectivity with the rest of the staff. So the guys trust us and, you know, feel like that we have their best interest and can help them, you know, improve. But also just learning from Brad through March of just how prepared you have to be, how much work and time, you know, you have to have, you know, you have to have extra thoughts on adjustments. Okay. If plan A doesn't work, what's plan B or what's plan C? The mental clarity to be able to understand when to make those adjustments as well. And when to, you know, change certain things or when to yell at a player, when to not, like all those things. Like nobody ever got yelled at on our team except me, you know, and, you know, Brad chose his spots, you know, I'll never forget. I got scored on a guy named Isaiah Cannon, who ended up making the NBA from Murray State. We were playing them. He was a freshman. I didn't really respect him. He came out, he was killing me. And so Brad used that to come to the huddle. I was the defensive player, right? So I come to the huddle. He starts screaming, is there anybody on this team that can guard Isaiah Cannon? I was guarding him. And I'm like, you know, I felt that. But he knew how to push that button in that moment, in that big game, you know, to at least help me move forward, which was going to help our team. And so just taking, you know, those little cues from him really over the course of my 4 years with him and then working with him in Boston, you know, is helping me now as a coach in the NBA.
That's a straight through line in many ways. But Shelvin, you are dabbling in the dark side with me and media these days. So I don't know if the correlation is quite the same, but I'm sure you have a bunch of different teammates as you hop to different games and work with different play-by-play folks. But what's sort of your biggest takeaway as you navigate your next chapters?
So this networking in college basketball, you know, going to the Final Four this weekend, using the connections, speaking to former coaching staff, Terry Johnson at Purdue, and being able to pick up different nuggets to help me understand the game of college basketball now. You know, I've been overseas the past 2 years playing professionally. Now I'm back, so I didn't get to watch any games, seeing a lot of people transfer. Hopefully no one transferring from your program. You know, everybody's doing that. It's like NBA free agency out there. But what Ron said is, remaining calm is the biggest thing I got from college and going through the March Madness, because a lot of things can happen, especially when you in the media and you're on live TV, understand how to say certain things without making someone offended. Same thing as like talking to your teammate, get something accomplished without hurting someone's ego. So it's kind of the transition I'm dealing with right now.
Let me tell you, you're never going to make everybody happy. I got fan bases coming at my neck, and I'm like, whatever, I said what I said. Anyway, Marissa. I mean, it's kind of a clean line for you, similar to Ron. You go from assistant to head coach. But I'm curious about the responsibility that you now feel as you create and basically not just a program, but a culture around your program.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, the best thing, Coach Aram actually gave me this advice because I was looking at a Power Five job straight from Connecticut to the next chapter. And then my alma mater opened. And, you know, we're a mid-major at Boston University. And he's like, if I'm you, I cut my teeth at my alma mater. You go and, you know, you make history there, whatever, and then learn and grow and then take the next job. And when you talk about building a culture, when you talk about making mistakes, when you talk about learning and growing and figuring out who you are as a leader, because it's real easy as assistants and even as players and even as fans to be like, I would do this and I would do that. And why didn't they do this? And now when it comes to you and everyone's like, what do you want? What do you think? What do you think? Like, shit, I don't know. What do you think? You know what I mean? Like, you know, like you're just trying to like, there's so much coming at you. And so now, having really understood what it is that I want us to be built upon here. And I took those nuggets from UConn and then from Boston. And now here, it's so much more clear to me. And I also feel so much more convicted and know who I am as a coach, as a leader, and really how I want to be able to help mold young women, not just as basketball players, but also to help them as women. And honestly, as a Black female, right? That's another level of responsibility.
Note to you, Marissa, if your players say we shouldn't play on a game or we should go to class on a game day, you might want to listen.
Listen. One thing Chris Daly at UConn used to always say to our kids jokingly, you are letting academics get in the way of basketball. So I take that. And I promise you, if we're playing a national championship on a Monday, we're not going to class for 2 weeks.
We good.
And don't tell my AD I said that, but we are focused on winning.
Gotta get
Marissa, you know, I'm a super fan of you in this light. And I love the conversation around Black women as head coaches. You're an example of all that can be. But even you, Ron, like we're having this conversation about Black folks and opportunities to be empowered and coach. So it's incredible to watch both of you all work. Shelvin, they need us too. We're on our side, okay? So I'm excited to hear more of your expertise. All right, so a commonality between all of you guys is Coach Brad Stevens, who helped us out with an e-coach video, which are our resources for folks that listen to this podcast. I just want to hear, we've mentioned various stories, but what made him so successful in college with the Celtics initially, and now probably, I think he's doing pretty good in the front office as the Celtics have shot up the Eastern Conference rankings as of late, Shelvin.
Yeah, I think him just being a humble guy. You can have any kind of conversation. And the biggest thing I got from being with Coach Stevens, we never talk about basketball. You know, a lot of times you deal with basketball every day. You know, their coaches, everyone's coming up to them, asking them basketball questions. But we talk about more in life. You feel that connectivity. And you're able to accomplish more, but you feel like you have someone you can just go to and just talk about things. You know, he spoke at my wedding. I come on advice with wife, family, kids, different things. So it's never about basketball. I think that's what makes him so special, being a coach.
Ron, what you got?
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about this. We could do a whole podcast just on this. But, you know, I agree with Shelvin. The humility that he has stands out probably more than anything else. Like, it's never about him, ever. And I think people see that. They feel that. They know that. And the other part about it, he's just a real dude. Like, you know, I don't even know a better way to say it. He's a real dude. He's not, you know, your time with him is never too big. He's never trying to rush away from a conversation with you. I think players felt that. You know, that we did when we played, you know, at Butler. I know the Celtics players did. That's what made him a good NBA coach, that it wasn't about him. You know, if you have at our level, if you have a big ego as a coach and you didn't play in the NBA, you have no chance of success. Mm-hmm. So he came in there and understood that. But he was the same way at Butler. You know, he had no ego. He was just a young guy that worked hard. And I think the thing that, you know, he probably gets a lot of credit for that's out there. He's super smart and he's really well organized and he's just a clear, everything is clear. He never worries about more than he has to. His mind is always clear. He doesn't overdo anything. And so he's just able to focus on what's important, and that makes him good.
That's amazing. Marissa, I know that you had some opportunity to interact with him when he was coaching the Celtics and you were at Boston. Any takeaways that stand out for you?
I have to tell a story that was like, this I think speaks to exactly what they're talking about, like being a regular dude, to use Ron's word. So,
he's a dude.
Yeah, so COVID happens. It actually, the world ended on my birthday, March 12th.
Oh.
And we were supposed to be playing in, I shouldn't say ended, but stopped. Well, it felt like it ended. we were supposed to be playing a semifinal game. That year, it was my second year at Boston. We had a really good team. We felt like we were going to be able to go back to the NCAA tournament for the first time since I was a junior in college. So it was like really special, exciting. And then boom, COVID hits. And so now after we're all scrambling and trying to figure out, it's like, how do you honor your seniors in that moment? And one of my seniors was a huge Celtics fan. She's from Boston area. She's a huge Celtics fan. And Kara Lawson gave me Coach Stevens' cell phone, which I thought right away, I was like, damn, like this guy is just gonna like, that I was out here like peddling it, but like this guy's gonna let me, you know, call him directly or text him. And so I just reached out and said, listen, I know this is a huge ask, but would you be willing to do like a video message to one of my seniors because of COVID, we didn't get to do senior night, it's over. And without hesitation, he was like, absolutely. And then went so far as to say, tell me a little bit more about her. Like, so it wasn't just a generic, like, hey, this is Brad Stevens, you know, congrats, whatever. He talked about her, you know, communication degree. He just really dug into a little bit more. And to me, that spoke volumes and also inspired me to make sure, I mean, I feel like I'm a genuine person. However, you want to make sure people know that without you ever having to tell them. And if you never even really met them, to feel that kind of come across. And so to me, that spoke volumes, and it had nothing to do with, you know, X's and O's or anything like that. So how you make people feel. And I really appreciate and respect him even more after that experience.
That's a great story. Certainly a regular dude. We should all aspire to be regular dudes in that way. Marissa Mosley, head coach at Wisconsin, Ronald Norred on the staff with the Indiana Pacers, Shelvin Mack, broadcaster extraordinaire. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with me and spending some time sharing your nuggets on March Madness. Best of luck in all that lies ahead for you guys.
Thank you.
Monica, thank you.
We want to thank our friends at the NBA Coaches Association and eCoach for providing content from their eCoach basketball video library to give our viewers an insider's perspective on how NBA coaches teach the game. Download the eCoach Basketball Plus app from your app store or head over to eCoachBasketball.com to access the NBA Coaches video library and learn more about how this platform can help coaches and players take their game to the next level.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Monica and Dallin on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. For more, go to JuniorNBA.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.